Hi, Simon Hill here. Enjoy our podcast? If you'd like to help us keep delivering the sort of quality football chat you want, then you can show your support by making a donation. Big or small, however much you can afford, we appreciate all your help, and every cent will be ploughed back into improving production. Thanks in advance from all of us at Shim, Spider, and so much more.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Corner kick. Celtic couldn't handle Wood on the set piece. It's a brilliant header. And Cahill goes to spectacular. What about that? What about that? Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup. He's scored.
You're with Shim, Spider, and so much more. Take it away, fellas.
Yes, hello again. Good to have you with us for episode 37 of Shim, Spider and so much more. A week when a W League player received a marriage proposal on the side of the pitch after she'd scored in her final game. What a moment that was for Riley Dobson and for the game here going viral worldwide. Later on in the show, we'll be joined by Socceroos goalkeeper Danny Vukovic, who has returned to Australia. But before that, two legends of the game who are my weekly cohorts, Željko Kalats and Craig Moore. How are you, boys?
Hello, lads. I'm good. I'm a bit tired after going for a walk for 10 kilometres. What idiot does that at our age?
Mate, well, you used to do 10 kilometre walk in a game, no?
Oh, yeah, right.
Hey, Spider, you had a rather boozy afternoon this week in the company of Alan Boksic and a certain Mark Viduka again.
Oh, my God. Friday afternoon, I got a little bit carried away, to say the least. And then we just started talking football with Boksic. And then all of a sudden, I brought up Viduka's name. And he could not stop raving about Dukes. So he goes, mate, we need to FaceTime him. I need to tell him how good he is and how he put me into retirement. And he was talking about this game Leeds played against Middlesbrough. And how Boksic was playing for Middlesbrough, and obviously Dukes was at Leeds, and Leeds tore them apart. And he said, Dukes tore them apart. He said he's never felt so helpless in a footballing team watching what Dukes done to him. He said, mate, that's enough. I got to retire after watching this.
Brilliant stuff.
And he rang him up to tell him that personally.
Brilliant.
Oh, dear. Maury, on a more serious note, you sent me a story this week, which everybody has now seen, of course, on Thierry Henry, removing himself from social media until there's accountability for racism and abuse on such platforms. I applaud him, I have to say. I think that's a really good message to send. And it's time that they took responsibility, these social media platforms. Do you agree?
Yeah, 100%. I applaud him as well. Look, we've now seen, obviously, teams not taking the knee because they feel as if it's hollow and the action needs to be taken. Thierry Henry, well done. I do applaud him. And I think we're at a stage now where, it's momentum's important in these kind of situations, Simon, I believe. And if we can keep momentum bubbling away and see people starting to take action, then I believe that we can make change.
Okay, thanks for the moment, guys. Let's get into it then in Hard Talk.
Hard Talk.
Hard Talk is brought to you by Streamgate, one of Australia's first live streaming companies operating since 2008. They focus on virtual and hybrid events, broadcasting to unlimited online audiences worldwide by either a secure private stream page or publicly on social media. Live streaming allows social online engagement as viewers are able to communicate back to the presenters in real time while social distancing. So should you require a small personal event or business level webcast, please go to streamgates.com.au or you can find them on Instagram. And how great, incidentally, to see a little success story in that regard this week. CBRE teaming up with Streamgate after they heard about their services via our little podcast. So congratulations to Mitch and Dennis. Hashtag, as we said during the week, football economy. That's what we've got to do. Guys, let's start with that wonderful Riley Dobson story. The pictures that went worldwide during the week as she scored on her final game for Melbourne City. And then received a marriage proposal from her boyfriend on the pitch after the game. In case you don't know, Riley is quitting the sport in order to look after her fiance, Matt Stoneham, who's unfortunately got brain cancer. What an incredible human interest story, guys, and just very moving pictures during the week.
Yeah, and that was it. Sorry, Maury. It was very moving, wasn't it? It was to see her run over and see them embrace. It was fantastic vision, and to see something like that come out of the W League and go worldwide, brilliant stuff. And we wish them good luck.
Yeah, no, this is the same. Like, it's a wonderful story. Deserved to go viral. Deserved to go worldwide. An absolutely amazing story. And we obviously, we wish Riley and we wish Matt all the very, very best, but a great story.
Sure is. Still on the W League, Canberra United secured their final spot at the weekend. Sydney FC can clinch the premiership on Wednesday. They have a game against Melbourne Victory, who actually beat Perth Glory to seal top four spots themselves. And I think they can still win the premiership too. So the top four, Brisbane Roar, who are top at the moment but can't win the premiership because the teams below them have got to pick up points against each other. Sydney FC, Melbourne Victory and Canberra United. And unfortunate for Adelaide United, had such a great season that they have missed out. And just to follow on from the Riley Dobson story, guys, as we move over to the men's game, our thoughts with Brandon O'Neill and his father, Miles, as he battles terminal lung cancer as well. These are horrible, but wonderful stories in many ways, because they reveal how close our footballers are to their families and how tough it must be to try and continue a professional career when you've got all that stuff going on in the background. And Brandon, of course, is away in Thailand playing for Buriram. Must be very, very difficult for him, Spider.
Yeah, look, obviously testing times for everyone. And, you know, a lot of players are always so close to their families because their families have always been there for them. And to think that they are away when there is an illness, they would probably like to be at home and closer to their families. Trying times, but a lot of the players actually play for their families when they are away. So hopefully that can help his father, and we wish him all the very best.
Sure do. Let's move on to the A-League. The competition continues to deliver. I don't know if you saw this, guys. A wonderful piece of skill from Renato Piscopo. During the week, playing for Wellington against Melbourne Victory during the week. Ball that comes out of the air and he, over his shoulder, kills it in one touch and then plays it forward to David Ball. Ulysses Davila also involved and Tom Mohamed, the Israeli, with the finish. Absolutely a terrific goal by Wellington Phoenix, but great to see that Renato Piscopo, of course, could be in Tokyo for the Olympics with that lovely piece of skill, Maury.
Well, he will be. But you're right. It was an amazing bit of skill because it come from a clearance from Wellington in their own box. The ball come down with snow on it, but I tell you what, it come down nice on his foot. It was a brilliant touch, and then also a great release, a great pass that put Wellington on the counter. That ends up with Hemed scoring a wonderful team goal. So great skill from Piscopo. We've seen him, show really good abilities throughout his time at Wellington Phoenix, and he'll be great for, he will be in that shake-up. He'll be in the Olympic squad. So great bit of play.
Spider, moving on to you, Melbourne City, Maury and yourself both tipped them to be champions at the start of the season as Maury punches the air. They're certainly playing like champions elect at the moment. They're playing some terrific stuff. And that front three in particular of Andrew Nabuts, Craig Noon, Jamie McLaren, they're on fire at the moment. Six straight wins, the latest of which being a 4-1 success over Western Sydney Wanderers, who are going pretty well themselves up until that particular game.
Yeah, what a difference when you have your full front line to pick from. I think I said last week, I think Nabu's made a hell of a difference. We have all touched on how they started slowly, but the momentum that they are growing, the way they are playing, the press, the attacking style of football is fantastic. And you know what? The front three are getting all the praise. You know, the guys at the back are doing a great job as well because they actually do bomb forward as well. I just think they've got a top squad, Son. I really do. I think they've got a really good squad. I think Paddy Cazdorbo is doing a fantastic job as his first year as head coach. I really can't applaud him for any more, and hopefully they don't let us down, Maury, and they win the title.
Mate, go on, good. Best three up front in the country.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Okay. Central Coast Mariners remain top of the table at the moment, although they dropped points again against Melbourne Victory on Saturday, who again let a lead slip. Grant Brebner says they can still make the finals. Interested in your views on that. And also, probably this one's for you, Spider, the spectre of Tony Popovich continues to loom over the club. A bit of speculation during the week that's maybe Popper is being looked at by Victory, which is probably a little bit unfair with Grant still in the job, but interested in your thoughts nonetheless.
Yeah, I suppose that's just talk, ain't it? Like, what else are you going to say? Popper's without a job. I know Brebner's there at the moment, but you got someone of the calibre of Popper available. It's normal that his name would come up, you know, as well as maybe a return from Muskie could be possible as well. So, but as Brebner was saying, they can make the top six. Look, nothing would surprise me in the A-League, but you'd have to put a string of games of about six wins in a row. And if you can't win two in a row, I see it very, very difficult putting six in a row.
And Spides, this was a disappointing result. Obviously, the draw, but I felt that the goal that they conceded was a poor one. You know, they commit in a wider area, then Mariners end up getting in behind them, which shouldn't really have happened. And at the same time, a team that you can still see lacks in confidence, Cam Sober, has a really good opportunity late on in the game, takes a touch that gets him away from goal, and really the opportunity goes away, which could have been a winning goal and a good victory for Melbourne. Victory. So, look, you're right, they need to get on a run. And we know that getting on a run and winning five, six, seven games is not easy to do in the A-League.
Maury, has the Mariners' bubble burst just a little bit? Three without a win now?
Yeah, no, I think we touched on it a couple of weeks ago that I feel as if there's better teams below that are chasing them. Look, they've had a fantastic season and important for the Mariners to be able to, you know, to bounce back, to be resilient now and get back to winning ways. But I do feel that there's better teams that are chasing them down and that will go over the top of them as well.
It's funny, ain't it? Like, Simon, you just go, like, we talk about the bubble bursting for Central Coast. I mean, they haven't won in three, but they've picked up points. Yeah. You know, it was a draw. I know we all say, Central Coast is top of the table playing against last, they should win. It doesn't happen like that in football. And they keep picking up points. And I think Central Coast will be happy where they are at the moment.
That's they should sure. be. They certainly should be. They're top of the league still, even though the teams beneath them have got some games in hand. Just one more on Tony Popovich, Spider, before we leave that particular topic. I assume you stay in touch with Popper. Is that the sort of job that would interest him at all? Do you know? Is he keen on a return to Australia, or is he more content to sort of bide his time over in Europe and wait for another opportunity over there?
Look, mate, it's a hard one because Melbourne Victory is a very interesting job. It's a massive club. It's just about whether Popper wants to go home and whether it's true that Victory actually want him. That's the thing we don't really know. Is it just speculation? But as I said, dear, when you've got someone like the caliber of Tony Popovich available, and Melbourne Victory is in the position that they're in at the moment, you would actually put one and one together, which will give you two, and they would have to go after Tony Popovich if they wanted him badly. Oh, look, I think it's a job that it would interest him for sure, especially with what they have to offer Victory as a club, for sure.
Biggest club in the country. Sydney FC might disagree, of course. They've been the class act in the A-League over the last few years, but they lost on Sunday, 1-0 to Adelaide United. Another goal for Craig Goodwin, this time from the penalty spot. Six wins in a row now for Adelaide United. And Spider, we'll stick with you. Joe Gauci, reserve goalkeeper at the start of the season to James Delianov. He was the hero, a string of terrific saves, particularly in the second half.
What a late save.
Oh, mate. Yeah, the one he made from Bobo was outstanding. What the reflex save of that was brilliant. Like, because Bobo hits that, mate, clean as a whistle. And the reaction of the boy to get that over the bar was sensational. Fantastic save. And you know what? How lucky is Adelaide? Like, they got Delianov, who's 21, and I think Gauch is even younger. I think he's like only 20. Yeah, so, you know, these young guys are getting great opportunities to play matches. And you know what? They can only grow in confidence, Maury, when they make saves like that and play and perform. And the beauty is the team's actually doing well. So it gives the goalkeeper confidence as well. It's not getting where the team's rubbish and the goalkeeper's copping goals and he's getting blamed for everything. The team's doing well. And these young keepers are playing a major part in Adelaide's success this year.
Yeah, and we speak about, you know, the impacts that players can have. And you look at the last two or three weeks, you know, without Tommy Juric, Yenge coming in and what a job he's done. You know, big physical lad, great feet, a real handful. Bimby was a little bit unhappy, wasn't he, Simon, with the penalty? Although I did, you know, Craig Goodwin steps up. Spides, it'd be interesting to know what you think. I thought from his run-up, he's only going to go one side. Obviously, Redders goes the other way. But Adelaide are on fire, playing some good football. They did take an injury. I forget the left fullback. They took an injury, which might be a longer-term injury, so they might have to rejig things a little bit there.
The other games in the A-League at the weekend, Wellington 0, MacArthur 1. Denny Jeanreau with the winner, back-to-back wins for MacArthur now, so they're back on track. The Brisbane Roar Western United game was postponed, that due to wet weather in Queensland. The pitch soaked up there at Dolphin Stadium. And Perth Glory getting their first win in a month, Spider, against the Newcastle Jets. The return of Jason Guerrier to the A-League, perhaps a good move to try and shore up their rather leaky defence. And they had to do it the hard way as well after Jonathan Aspro got sent off in the first half, but they managed to hang on.
Yeah, I thought they'd done well. They showed some grit. You can't put it any other way. They were 2-0 up. They seemed to be cruising. And then obviously the red card changed everything. And Newcastle come at them with a bit of petrol in the second half. And they showed some tenacity to hold on. A great goal by Donovan to get them back into the match. And they had a few more chances that Newcastle would be very disappointed that they didn't probably score from. But, you know, Rocket's been in fine form for Perth. And you know what? After a month without a win, they'll take some satisfaction and some confidence out of that.
They will, Spies. You're talking 60 minutes with 10 men. You know, so you know how important when you can still manage to get over the line and take those 3 points, that might be, you know, just a little bit of a lift that Perth have needed to get themselves again on a little bit of a run and start looking to climb that ladder.
Couple more issues, guys, before we move overseas. Ange Postecoglou again opening up on his disappointment this week regarding the Asian Cup success back in 2015 and how it didn't translate to what he calls tangible gains for football. Of course, he did the same on our podcast a few weeks ago. And again, the quotes, there was no football legacy. We have to learn this, don't we, ahead of the Women's World Cup in a couple of years' time. Otherwise, we just repeat the same mistakes again.
Well, he's right. And you know what? We think we're the only three that are frustrated with some of the decisions made in football. Like, you know, people like Ange, when they say something, mate, we need to listen because these people are important to our game. They have a lot of knowledge and all they want is what's best for Australian football. So, mate, wake up, listen to these people. And I don't mean listen to just us three. The more than people that listen to us, the better for us.
Maury, the women's game again, the Matildas returning to action with two games in 4 days in April against Germany and the Netherlands, both going to be in Europe, European-based players only, which I'd venture to suggest is perhaps why we're seeing the likes of Emily Gilnick and Claire Polkinghorne head overseas, because they're looking at their international futures and thinking, well, if I'm going to be involved in it, I've got to be overseas.
Yeah, look, it makes a lot of sense. Obviously, you know, two fantastic games as well. So that's great, because we know how important preparation is for that tilt at a home World Cup. And, you know, you touched on Emily and Claire. I mean, Emily's, I think she's been overseas before. She was with Bayern Munich, wasn't she? So, you know, with Claire coming over to Europe, European-based camps, games, it's great for our girls. The more games that we can get into them, and the, you know, preparing them in the best possible way will give us an unbelievable opportunity in 2023.
Okay, last one, guys. I'm interested in both your views on this one. I wrote a piece during the week for the Footyology website that I've started writing for on Wellington Phoenix and the difficulties that they've had being based in the hub in Wollongong. I think it's a fascinating story, and one that not a lot of people have taken a huge amount of interest in. But something that came up during the interview that I did with David Dome, the Wellington CEO, he said in future they're looking to take a couple of games per season in the A-League to Wollongong. They want their W League side to be based there, of course. They're desperate to have a W League team. I think that's fair enough on the women's side of things. As David said, the league at the moment is not in a good enough state financially for the other clubs to be able to afford the travel to and forth and accommodation in Wellington. But the A-League side of things concerns me a little bit. They already take a game or two outside of Wellington to Christchurch, to Auckland, various other places. They're going to have a couple of games in Wollongong per season as well. What's the incentive for those supporters to attach themselves to Wellington Phoenix in Wellington? I think it's problematic. I understand the theory behind it, and I know that they want to forge a relationship with Wollongong. But is that the way forward for the A-League, moving, you know, games around three or four different centres? We're already seeing it with Western United, Tasmania, Amy Park, Geelong, Ballarat, various other places. I don't think it's good for spectators. Do you?
I don't get it. I actually don't get it, because where's your home ground advantage? You know, like your home ground is supposed to be a fortress. Your supporters are supposed to be there to be your 12th man. By traveling around, we have seen, you said it well, Simon, we've seen with Western United, when you're traveling around everywhere, it's very difficult to get a base of supporters, because you don't know what you stand for. And we all know who Wellington Phoenix is. It's a New Zealand club plays out of Wellington. Now, if anything, mate, they probably should play more games out of Auckland or Christchurch and actually invite the New Zealand supporters to follow the club. That's my stance. I think it's a real difficult one to play out of Wollongong.
Maury?
Yeah, tough one. Look, I totally understand about the moving about. If anything, for me, it needs to be just a short-term solution. You need to have your own home. You need to have that opportunity to have your own home to be able to generate your own fan base and to really have that connection with your supporters. The W League side of it, Simon, I do understand in terms of game finances, and no issue there. But I guess a question for you. I mean, I'm only seeing the highlights and bits and pieces. Like, how well have the Phoenix been received in Wollongong?
Well, look, I think in terms of the local community, the business community, and David made this point very well, there's a lot of interest in an A-League club there. And I think that's great. But I think if you're from Wollongong, and I know having spoken to Luke Wilkshire about this, who's the coach of the Wollongong Wolves, they want their own club, don't they? I mean,
yes.
You know, they don't want to go and support Wellington Phoenix on a full-time basis.
No, I agree. I think they're happy to do it, Simon, at the moment, part-time, because they're A-League action every second week, which is fantastic. Plus, they've got the NPL New South Wales with Wollongong Wolves. So they're getting an abundance of football at the moment, which is fantastic for Wollongong people who live in the Wollongong area. But Wollongong Wolves want to be known as Wollongong Wolves in the A-League, not to support Wellington. That's my opinion. I could be wrong. I don't know what the business people down there think, but the crowds aren't big enough, and they're quite patriotic, aren't they, the people from Wollongong? So I don't think the crowds are going to get any bigger down there supporting Wellington, that's for sure. And when Wellington's doing well out of Wellington, yeah, they get good crowds. They get good crowds at home.
I think for me, again, it's about building identity, this intangible word that we've spoken about a lot on the podcast over the last few months. And we know it's difficult to do. The A-League is young, the clubs are young, but you have to put down roots somewhere for me. And by moving around the country, playing 3, 4, 5 different home grounds, I don't think it helps to do that. But hey, that's just me. What do I know? Before we head to London Calling, quick shout out to Rashid Mahazi, who's quit football at the age of 28 for good, he says this time. He was playing in Korea with Incheon United, says that he's been suffering from anxiety, not enjoying the world of football, says he feels like he doesn't belong and that there's not enough support for footballers, that it's a brutal environment. Maury, you got any thoughts on that before we go into the next segment?
Look, it's very sad, obviously, and professional sport, it's not for everyone. And when you start hearing, you know, the anxiety and not enjoying what he was doing, then for me it becomes an easy decision. But I guess what we do need to listen to is in terms of the lack of support, you know, that is maybe there for players that are going through these kind of off the field issues, Simon. I think it's important that they are addressed, and you know, you've got to continually work at that, because if we can improve those parts, like I says, we have more happy players, we keep people within the game, that's very, very important. But we wish Rashid all the very, very best in whatever he does next.
Sure do. And let's hope it's not too long before we see him back playing in the NPL, as he's promised he may well do. Let's head overseas. London Calling.
London Calling.
With over a century of experience, ACPE's industry-recognised specialist bachelor degrees will turn your passion for sport, fitness, health science, education or dance into a career. Interested? Of course you are. Find out where ACPE can take you. Apply online today for Semester 1 2021 at acpe.edu.au.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, let's start with the World Cup qualifiers in Europe. A whole raft of games over the last few days. One or two little surprises. Spain held at home by Greece during the week. Michael Balkanis, of course, one of the very few Aussie coaches overseas, is number two to John Van Skip for the Greek national team. And then Spain, Maury, only just squeaking over the line against Georgia in the follow-up game, at an injury time winner from Dani Olmo, giving them a 2-1 win, but far from convincing, the Spanish.
Yeah, no, it's so a lot of these international games, one, you blink, you miss a game, but there's, you know, there are a few surprises. You know, Spain, obviously, you know, the draw against Greece, which was a fantastic, you know, I mean, Spain dominated the game, but Greece got the result that they needed. And then again, you'd expect Spain to kind of be comfortable against Georgia, but again, it's a late stoppage time winner. So certainly not been convincing, but I guess when you go through a qualifying campaign and if you find yourself at the World Cup, you're not thinking about a late 94th minute winner, are you? You're just thinking that you're at the World Cup.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you what they're thinking about in the Republic of Ireland at the moment is the 1-0 home loss to Luxembourg, which is extraordinary. Stephen Kenny now got to be under a huge pressure for his job, Spider.
Mate, what's wrong with them? They just got no players playing at a high level at the moment.
No, they have. Like, They haven't won in 10. Their record is diabolical. It really is.
What's the problem?
Yeah. I couldn't believe. Yeah.
I seen Seamus Coleman's interview after, and obviously he was, you know, mate, he fronted the media, which is not hard after a hugely disappointing result. He didn't throw the manager under the bus. He's just like, you know, he says, I'll never hide behind the manager. He says, we've got players that should be doing better. That's not happening. You know, I certainly come and prepared well for this game. He says, I'd like to think all the other players did as well. He says, but it's not good enough. So, look, I don't know. There's been this change in terms of, you know, Kenny coming in, and he's had huge support, but he hasn't had the results. So that's a big, big problem for Ireland.
Mm. The Netherlands had a big problem as well during the week, defeated by Turkey by 4-2, a hat-trick for Burak Yilmaz, even though the Dutch did get back on track in their later game. Other results, Serbia 2, Portugal 2. Portugal coming from 2 down. That was a heck of a game, Spider.
That was... What about Ronaldo? Oh, mate, did he chuck his toys out of the cot or what?
Oh, mate, he did, Spides, but, oh, my God. Mate, the ball's well and truly over the line, mate. But it's one of those ones, Simon, as well, because there was a couple of penalty incidents. There was that goal line technology or whatever, like Ronaldo, the goal that should have stood that gives Portugal a 3-2 win. We complained.
They were up by 2-0.
Yeah, we complained with VAR. But my thing is, right, and I've kind of been scratching my head a little bit with this, right? So see if rules are going to be implemented, right, and therefore you've got VAR that's here. Why is it not activated and therefore used globally in all competitions? I don't think we can run with something unless it's activated at every single level in terms of the professional game.
Totally agree. I mean, this has always been my beef with this, that it's not uniform. And to be fair to the much maligned and probably fairly set Blatter, you know, this was always why he was against it, because he said, you can't have it in every single level of the game. You can't implement it, you know, all the way down to park football. Anyway, it's... Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that was over the line from Cristiano Ronaldo, and he's probably right to spit the dummy a little bit. And this is the inconsistency that I think infuriates everybody. Other results, Czech Republic 1, Belgium 1. Romania lost at home to Germany by the only goal, Serge Gnabry. England had a couple of wins, defeating San Marino by 5-0, and then Albania by 2-0. Harry Kane and Mason Mount, who's in good form for club and country at the moment. Maury, interested in your take on Gary Lineker's comments. San Marino, that they won only one game in their entire history. Lineker's called for lower ranked teams to have to qualify to play in this group stage. I think he's probably got a point. And I know that this obviously happened in Oceania back in the day, largely driven by the Australia 31 American Samoa 0 game in 2001. You played in that one, Maury.
I did, and I'm not sure how many times I touched the ball because we just kept going back to kickoff. I don't even think the ball came anywhere near me. I think Muskie touched it 4 times in that game and scored 4 penalties.
Were you smoking cigars for 90 minutes, were you?
Well, you're scoring a goal every 3 minutes, which was a crazy... I agree with Gary Lineker. I think that in terms of these lower-tiered nations, give them the opportunity where potentially they can get more games, through these pre-qualifying scenarios, which gives them the opportunity to improve. And at the same time, I think the higher level, which we know play a huge amount of games, are not caught up in these kind of meaningless international matches. I just feel as if it's probably something that needs to be looked at. Don't know how they come about with the right solution for it, because I know it's not easy, but I certainly agree that there should be some form of, you know, pre-qualification to get to the main stage of World Cup qualifiers.
Well, they had this tournament, Maury, this European one, and they were all ranked. they were ranked. And I think it has to happen because I'm not being funny. There must have been 20 games on today, all national team matches, and there wasn't a game worth watching that had some sort of interest. Like there's too many top teams against smaller teams, and yeah, man, they don't take it. Look, they take it serious because they're going to a World Cup, but the qualifiers for a World Cup. But it's their poor standard of matches, you know. I believe they have to qualify to get there and then earn their right to jump into the groups with the better ranked countries.
I suppose the argument against that is Republic of Ireland 0, Luxembourg 1. But anyway, round and round we go. Maury, you're in Scotland, of course, at the moment. They're preparing to play their first major tournament since 1998. They had a couple of draws in their qualifiers, 2-2 with Austria, 1-1 with Israel. What's the feeling in Scotland? Do they feel as though they're going to be competitive at the Euros or not?
They know that they'll go down there and they'll be competitive. The thing is with Scotland is a lot of the times the way they set up and their structure is quite negative. And it's not until maybe the game looks as if it's getting away for them before you start to see a positive side to the way that they play. So, you know, they're very, very cautious. And again, tonight, the game against Israel, first half, didn't really threaten much. And then Steve Clarke made a tactical change and the right change second half and went four at the back instead of the five. And all of a sudden they've got an extra body in a forward area that's causing more problems. And they looked a lot more positive. So look, the Scottish will go, they'll go to the Euros. They'll enjoy it. Hopefully we've got crowds. That was another interesting one watching that game, Scotland-Israel tonight, you know, seeing supporters again, Simon, in a ground. And again, a huge advantage for Israel, which obviously they didn't take. But, you know, the last game Scotland had against Austria at home was in front of no fans. So there is an advantage there for some nations that are able to play in front of fans.
Indeed. One of the results we should make mention of, Bulgaria 0, Italy 2. Roberto Mancini's done a very good job, of course, of revitalising Italy, who missed out on the last World Cup in Russia, the first World Cup they've missed in 60 years. I think they're on is it 22 or 23 game unbeaten run at the moment. So they're going okay, the Azzurri. Briefly onto the women's game again. That's Sam Kerr scoring for Chelsea in the first leg of the UEFA Women's Champions League quarterfinal tie against Wolfsburg. Both the legs being played in Budapest, of course, due to the travel restrictions and the pandemic. She's going pretty well as Sam this season, and could well be in line for an FA Women's Super League crown as well. And talking of the FA WSL, Spider, they've just signed a new TV deal worth $8 million. That's about $15 million per season. It's going to be broadcast by both the BBC and Sky Sports. So the women's game continues to grow.
Yeah, how good is it? Big dollars for television rights, and obviously big clubs behind it as well. So that helps, but the amount of quality games that some of our girls that are playing over there are getting is fantastic for the 2023 World Cup, really is.
Well, even, Spides, even over the weekend, Hayley Razzo scored a hat-trick in a 5-0 win for Everton. Caitlin Ford was on the score sheet with Arsenal. Sammy Kerr got another double, I think, Simon, against Aston Villa. Obviously, the return leg against Wolfsburg on Wednesday in the Champions League, so Chelsea are 2-1 up there. It was interesting to see the quarterfinals of the Women's Champions League. Seeing some big clubs there, Spies, you know, your Man Cities, your PSGs, your Barcelonas. It's kind of, you know, not only men, but you're seeing strong, strong clubs that have got obviously that women's side of it. So our girls are going really, really well over here, in particular in England.
Couple more before we move on to footballers' lives. Some new rules to be introduced on heading in the UK next season, potentially. Chris Sutton, former Chelsea and Blackburn Rovers striker, appearing before a select committee and telling them that there should be a maximum of 20 headers per training session. And what they're going to do, they're going to research the rest of the season, I think specific to a couple of clubs in particular, before the findings are then analysed and incorporated into the new rules. This is going to change football fundamentally, potentially, isn't it, Maury? Particularly for defenders, which is the part of the pitch that you played in.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I don't, I don't exactly know how many headers I've done each day at training, but look, it is an issue, obviously, with dementia, and a lot of the stories, unfortunately, we're hearing from previous or past football players. But I remember when I was at Newcastle and Nigel Pearson, the warm-up alone, mate, I was heading the ball 20, 30 times, and they were getting launched from 30 yards. I used to start the game with a headache, honestly. But look, this is a serious issue within the game. Chris Sutton is extremely passionate about it. He has been for some time. I believe his father has dementia. So, look, it's something that definitely I'm all for in terms of trying to reduce any further issues and making sure that we protect our players.
Do you reckon we'll see in our lifetimes heading being banned in football, Maureen?
No, I don't think you can, no. I don't even know how to go into detail. I just can't see how football can be played without heading the ball. We see some beautiful moments. Timmy Cahill wouldn't have had a career.
But if it's damaging your long-term health.
But I don't think, like I said, I'm sure that we'll come to a solution that... you know, technology with the ball, making sure that within practices during the week and that there's a limited amount of contact. But I think the game will stay the same, and I still think that heading will be a part of the game moving forward.
Interesting. I'm not so sure about that. I think, you know, as soon as litigation starts occurring and that football clubs, authorities have to start shelling out big, big amounts of money in compensation to those who are suffering the long-term effects of this, I reckon we might see change pretty quickly. Anyway, we'll find out. Spider, last one to you. UEFA is going to end the current financial fair play rules, which in my opinion is good because I think the current ones are a complete turkey anyway. A new system that is going to allow more freedom of spending. And the other part of this equation is that there is a meeting on Wednesday that appears as though it's going to rubber stamp these changes to the Champions League, and we're going to have a 10-game group stage. I don't think fans particularly want it, but clearly the clubs do, and they're going to push it through.
Yeah, well, that's quite astonishing, ain't it, really? 10 games on top of the amount of games that they play at in their own competitions back in their own countries, and that's only the group stages. So is it going to be a lot? Look, guys, we've spoken about it on the pod many a time. It's all about money. It's a no-brainer. It's all about money. This fair play one about spending, I'm glad they're getting rid of it, Simon. I can see you giggling because you're going to buy everyone now. But but really, you can't keep up to date with it anyway. Like, seriously, the clubs are doing all sorts to buy who they want anyway. So with that now, it's gung-ho, the PSGs, the Man Cities, the Chelseas of the world, maybe even some of the big clubs like Man United might start throwing out some cash again, Real Madrid, Barcelona's.
And just completely a little bit off script, just wanted to mention, did you see the massive, massive deal that was done also for the CDR?
The Zone. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
That's a huge amount of money coming into Spider, what is already a very, very exciting league in Italy. So,
hey, that's excellent. Like, I mean, the Serie has got better and better each year because, I mean, we all know that Italy was well known for the Catenaggio defending, but anyone who watches the Italian teams play at the moment, they're playing on the front foot, and it's actually a top league to watch. It's a top league to watch. The country that actually worries me a little bit, I mean, it's great to see Italy get that, but France is in problems. France has got big problems with the television rights.
And we've got some small ones as well back home.
That's a whole different podcast, guys. Just to close on the FFP rules, I'm not in favour of change just because it allows clubs like mine to go out and spend what they want. I just think that the basis of the whole old FFP was a wrong focus. I think that you've got to take into account debt, which is leveraged on clubs as well. And that wasn't the case under the old FFP. It was all about income. And I think it needs to be a fairer balance if we're going to have those rules. Anyway, thanks for the moment, guys. Let's kick on into our final segment. And we've got another huge guest waiting for us in Footballers' Lives.
Footballers' Lives.
Well, our guest today was born in Sydney in 1985, began his football career with Bonnyrigg White Eagles before making his NSL debut for Parramatta Power in 2002. When the A-League began, he signed for the Central Coast Mariners, staying 5 years. Since then, he's played for Wellington, for Perth, Melbourne Victory and Sydney in the A-League, and had overseas stints with Konyaspor, Vegalta, Sendai and Genk, of course, where he stayed 4 years before returning to Australia just last week to be with his family. He made his Socceroos debut in 2018, has three caps for his country. It's a big podcast welcome to Danny Vukovic. How's quarantine, Vuka?
It's going all right. It's going all right. I've done 7 days, seven more to go, so I can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
And you told us you've been on the exercise bike for an hour yesterday.
Yeah, cursing myself. Not a big fan of cardio, as Spider will attest to. Us goalkeepers, that's why we became goalkeepers, so we didn't have to do this cardio. But I need to do something, so to keep the fitness up and keep the kilos down.
Well, we're glad to have you on the podcast. Let's ask the serious question first. Why did you decide to return home, and why now?
Yeah, I think the circumstances changed in Genk. I was playing when we did send my wife and son home for them to be here for when the baby came. 2 weeks after they left, I lost my position in the team. Didn't agree with the decision, but had to accept it. And around that time, I had a meeting with the sports director who said that I could go home if I wanted. The club would support me. And after that meeting, I guess the thought was planted in my head. I thought about it a lot and then came to the decision to come home.
So had you not lost your spot in the team, you might have stayed. Is that fair to say?
There was a thought for that. Coming off contract without my future certain, I think we felt like it was maybe a good thing to play until the end of the season. But once that changed, I kind of came to the conclusion like nothing really would matter for me if I stay there, sit on the bench and train, or come back to Australia, train here with John Crawley, the goalkeeper coach for the national team, and most importantly, be here for my wife and son.
That was the ideal situation, like a not ideal situation, was to come back and be with the family. Because mate, I was shocked when I seen it, because there's no way in the world you would have been left without a club. You would have got a club in Europe once again.
Well, that's it, Spider. But for whatever reason, the coach has made a decision to change. At the time, I was captaining the side, so I think an important part of the team. We had a few bad games, bad performances. My form wasn't terrible. I might have had one or two goals I could have done better, but I was the one that sort of got the chop in the team. And I then just thought I had to come home. It's not just the pregnancy. There's other things in the family that kind of made me need to come back as well, and I'm comfortable with the decision in the end.
Danny, we're not going to pry into those issues, obviously, but we are interested clearly in your football future. Assuming that you are going to play again, that opens up the door for an A-League club. There's been a bit of speculation about Western Sydney Wanderers. Don't know whether you want to comment on that, but clearly, if you're going to be in Sydney, and you are, then you're probably looking for a New South Wales club, I imagine.
Yeah, look, I'm not closing the door on any options. I think overseas is still an option for us, whether it's Europe or Asia, but also Australia. I wouldn't be disappointed coming back home. I've lived a year now with Corona in Belgium, and it was one of the hardest hit. And the quality of life isn't great there, and it is going to be like that for the foreseeable future. So, being home where Corona's very good, that appeals to me. We're going to have two kids under the age of 5 and a half. But as I said, not closing the door on anything. Just going to see what comes in and then make the best decision.
Okay. It's unfortunate, isn't it, that's the way it's finished with Genk, because you had a great 4 years there, winning the championship. You were player of the year for the club, obviously got your Socceroos debut during that time as well. And the fans gave you a terrific send-off, the video of which you posted on social media. You had a great relationship with those supporters, it would appear.
Yeah, I did. I think it's something I've prided myself on everywhere I've gone, to really engage with the supporters and show that I appreciate them. And I think in turn, they appreciate that part of me. So I've always been someone that gives my time to the supporters. And when I got to the club, they told me that the supporters expect blood, sweat and tears. As long as you're giving 100%, they'll always support you, and that's what I did. Once I started playing and we were winning games, every time we scored goals, I'd go celebrate with them, and just over the years developed this great relationship, and then it culminated in these scenes that I've posted on my social media. It was just amazing to have them at my doorstep chanting and letting off flares and giving me a nice send-off.
Vuka, that's a wonderful connection that you'll never ever lose when you really bond with a football club and a supporter base. Okay, one door closes in terms of your playing opportunity there. Hopefully a new one will open for you, but that's something that I'm pretty sure you'll be able to revisit down the line. Maybe life after football, certainly having that good connection with a very good club in Europe.
100%, Maury. I think. I've already been invited back to do the kickoff. That's something that they do in Belgium to honour an individual, normally a former player. So I'll go back at some point. But I've had so many messages saying that I'm going to be a Genki for life by the supporters. They've sort of accepted me as one of their own now. And certainly I'll have that connection for the rest of my career and post-football career also.
Vuka, it's pretty special to have two Aussies captain a club like Genk.
100%, 100%. Yeah, Josip Skoko has got a massive name in Belgium, but especially in Genk. He's a club legend. It led them to a championship, and in my time here now, everyone had only good things to say about Josip. So I'd like to think I added to the, the good vibes that the Australians brought to the club.
That's the current situation, Danny. Let's delve a little bit further back in your career to continue our chat. So Genk, of course, is your third crack at trying to make it overseas. You had spells previously in Turkey with Konyaspor, and then in Japan with Vegalta Sendai, which both ended without a single appearance at either club. Why did they not work out? And a question on Twitter that we got from Anthony Moon, would you do it again at those clubs if you had your time over?
Yeah, they're two completely different scenarios. Vegalta was a loan deal. Arnie was the coach. He got in contact with me, said he needed a goalkeeper. I was ready to come over. Going to the J-League, it was, I think, a step up in quality compared to what I was playing. So it was a no-brainer for me. But after a week or two of me being there, Arnie got the sack. And his assistant, a Japanese coach, took over. And he barely would even look at me, let alone give me an opportunity to play for his team. So that one sort of didn't work out, although I enjoyed my time there apart from not playing. And then Turkey was just a shambles. I got signed, did my medical, signed my contract in a big press conference. And then after 2 months, just before the start of the season, they said I could come home, that they weren't going to honour the contract. They didn't send it to the Turkish FA, and therefore I didn't have a contract with them. So a little bit of a disaster. A little bit similar I've just had a mind blank. Mustafa Amini. Yeah, Mustafa Amini. Yeah. Similar to what he's gone through recently.
Interesting. Let's go back to the earlier part of your career, back to your roots in Western Sydney. You come from, obviously, a family of Serbian heritage. So I imagine football was all around from your earliest memories. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was sport in general. I grew up in Western Sydney in St. Clair. It's a big rugby league.
Big city. Big city, St. Clair.
It is. I'll be going back there after this quarantine, Spider. I'll stay with my parents there. So looking forward to getting back. But rugby league was the big sport there as well. So for me, playing football with my dad and then rugby league with my friends. I wanted to play a bit of rugby league growing up, but my mum, being Serbian, she said it was too rough. So football was the obvious choice for me, and I'm glad I stuck with it. So.
And you got your chance in the professional ranks after starting with Bonnyrigg White Eagles with Parramatta Power. Do you remember your debut? I think it was at Hindmarsh, October 2002, Adelaide City Force, as they then were. Do you remember that game?
I do. I think Pantelis and Damien Mori might have scored against me that game. Yeah, I wasn't expected to play. I think Liam Reddy got sent off the week before, and we had another goalkeeper who was sitting on the bench for him, and I was in the stands the week before. And we got to the game at Hindmarsh, and Nick Theodorakopoulos was the coach. And I just looked at the whiteboard and my name was in the starting 11. And I ended up having to go to the toilet a few times, had the worst warm-up of my life. Played the game. I was petrified, but it was a great experience still.
How old were you, Vuka?
I think I was 16 or 17. Yeah, I was still in high school at the time, sitting on the bench. And a dream and totally unexpected. I think the best way to do it, because had I known that I was playing the week leading up to it, it would have been a horrible lead up, hardly any sleep and all the rest of it. So I think Nick Theo did well the way he did it.
When the A-League started, of course, you signed for the Central Coast Mariners. Originally, I think you were probably signed as John Crawley's number two, but he got injured pretty early on. He ended up, of course, in many ways being your mentor, and you ended up that first A-League season playing in a grand final.
I did. Yeah. So JC, John Crawley, was my mentor from under 12s. So he was my goalkeeper coach from then. And then we've linked up again at the Mariners. And then after five games, he got his career ending injury. So it was an amazing season. Again, a little bit unexpected. I wasn't really expecting to play much that season, but ended up almost playing a full year, and in a team that, on paper wasn't the best, but we had an amazing team camaraderie, and I think that's what helped us get all the way to the grand final. And unfortunately, we were beaten by one goal. Steve Corica, in the grand final, got the better of us.
Yeah. Vuka, I just want to ask you something about JC and about the mentoring that a lot of people probably don't understand. Because you've been with him for so long, and the likes of yourself and Matty Ryan have been with JC, how important is it for these young guys to have a mentor like that through their careers and to help them? Can you talk, because there's a lot of young keepers out there, I think, probably are missing what, not just the mentoring side, but the friendship side of it as well.
I think it's so important, mate. I think being a professional footballer is full of ups and downs, and probably a lot more downs than what people realise. And it's important to have someone you can go to and talk to and get advice and put things into perspective for you. I can't even tell you how many times I've been on the phone to JC, and just gone through certain things. You know, there's one recently where I felt like I didn't make a mistake. My goalkeeper coach at the club felt like I did. And yeah, it's nice to just get a different point of view on things. But yeah, it's important to have someone you can trust and rely on and get that advice from.
Back to the Mariners, Danny, you got to a second grand final in 2008. It's not exactly one to remember. I know that we've talked about this before on another podcast at quite some length. The Mariners lost. Of course, you had a little bit of a fallout with the referee, shall we say. You got a 9-month ban. You missed the Olympics, and you told us that you had to actually take out a personal loan to pay off the fine. Just take us through that story again and how difficult that must have been, because you're still pretty young at the time, to deal with all that.
Yeah, it was a bad situation, which I got myself into. And I mentioned I had to get a loan, which I did. And I don't want it to come across like I don't appreciate what the Mariners did for me, because they were amazing. I had a few comments after that last time we spoke on a different podcast, and it might have come across like I wasn't appreciative of what the Mariners did, but that couldn't be further from the truth. I was happy to do it. You know, it was my fine to pay, so that's no problem. But it was a difficult time. As you said, I was young, and a split second decision changed my life. And that was something hard to take.
Booker, I remember speaking to you roughly at that time. I think I'd been back in Australia for only a year. And I was absolutely devastated for you, because it meant obviously that you missed the Olympic Games. And I know how important for anybody to represent at that stage. And I just felt that the crime never fit the punishment. Is that kind of the way that you felt, or even all these years later, in terms of the way that it was handled?
I think so. I understand why it was a heavy penalty. It was the first incident of its kind in our country. So they wanted to make an example, and I get it. I think the fact that after we went to appeal, they did everything to try to allow me to go to the Olympics, because they split my suspension up after the appeal, which then allowed me to go. I think that shows that they realised it was probably a bit of a too harsh a decision, and then it was only FIFA coming in the end, saying I was banned from all international competition. So it is what it is. Like, I can't dwell on it anymore. I've dwelled on it enough over the years. It's happened, and I'm happy with how my career's panned out. It might not have panned out this way. So who knows how it could have been.
Let's move on to different things then. We got a question from a couple of our Twitter followers, TJS1852 and Ben Archer as well, about your stint at the Wellington Phoenix. Was the goal you scored for the Phoenix the highlight of your career?
It's not one of the biggest highlights. It is definitely a highlight. I think me and Spider are similar. I think Spider is a bit of a goal scorer himself in training sessions, and I think I'm pretty sure I've seen footage of Spider scoring a bicycle kick in a charity game or something.
And a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm the same. Like, in training, I'll play the ball out wide, and I'll get boys to whip crosses into me, and I'll do bicycles and headers and things like that. So those that know me know that I like to score goals. So to score a goal in the A-League and still be the only goalkeeper to do so is something I'm really proud of.
Vuka, when you headed the ball, but mate, the size of that head, it must have went a long, long way, huh?
No. I've got no comeback. What can I say? No comment. No comment.
Vuki, you also played, I mean, you moved around a bit in the A-League. You made a lot of games, a lot of appearances for Perth Glory, made another grand final in 2012. You lost again to Brisbane. Were you getting to the point where you were feeling a bit cursed? That was your third grand final that you'd lost.
Yeah, definitely. And we were in a position to win it. I think still with 15 to go, we were leading. And then the duo of Broish and Berisha took over the game, and yeah, it was devastating again, because especially I think in previous grand finals, I hadn't led in the game. You know, we lost to Sydney 1-0 and to Newcastle the same score. So, yeah, this was my chance, and 15 minutes to go, it was there in our hands, and we let it fall through. So that was a really tough one to take. That
was
one.
That the one with the dubious penalty, Wooker?
Yes, it was. Yeah. I still don't think it was. I know the Brisbane Roar fans believe it was. It was a tough one.
It was a fresh air swing, wasn't it?
Well, I thought so. There was minimal contact at best. And look, end of the day, it is what it is. He's made the decision, and we have to live with it.
VAR would have got it right back then, boys. Don't worry about that.
Mate, not with a penalty.
I think, to be honest, that they actually, you know, I was obviously working on that grand final, and the technology wasn't what it was today. But I remember they did the zoom in. They got a camera and really sort of magnified. And there was some contact from Liam Miller, I think, on Bessart Berisha. And I know I spoke to Jared Gillett that night, and he was absolutely adamant that he'd got it correct. But anyway. We're still arguing these decisions, aren't we? 10 years on. Vuki, you then went on to play for Melbourne Victory, winning the FFA Cup with them in 2015. So you finally got a winner's medal in a big game. Was that a bit odd, being a Sydney boy in Victory colours? Not that you were necessarily aligned to Sydney FC or Western Sydney Wanderers, but you were from the city of Sydney.
No, not so much, especially given the fact I've played at so many clubs already in the league. But it was an exciting move for me and my family at the time, coming from Perth to Melbourne. They were the current champions, the best supported team in the league, and a great atmosphere to play in front of. So, yeah, I was really keen to get there and felt welcome from the start. It wasn't the best season in the end, but it was nice to finally get a medal in the league.
And then a year afterwards, you came back to Sydney, of course, ostensibly because of the illness to your son, Harley. And along with being able to be back with your family, you probably had the best season of your domestic career, at least, under Graham Arnold, culminating in that title win in 16-17.
Yeah, so true. Just to link up with Arnie and JC again, especially after the season I had at Melbourne. It wasn't the best one. I think the situation off the pitch definitely affected how I performed on the pitch. So to get back with those guys who I trusted and who had belief in me was, I think, what I needed. And then to join an amazing team and group of players, it was easy to play in behind a team like that. So, really enjoyed my football and was able to get back to my best form.
Vuka, was that also when your wife had you in tears after the game? In terms of saying to you that you finally did it?
Yeah. You're right. I think after the grand final, we won it, and I've come to the sideline, and my family was waiting for me. My boy, my wife, my parents, and my brother. I think I saw them just in the tunnel, and my wife said it, and broke down in tears. It was one thing to win a title for the first time, but I think the most amazing part of it all was that my son was there with me. He was healthy again after his operation, and he had his second chance at life, and we're there all together celebrating. It was an amazing moment.
Which brings us full circle, Vuka, and obviously then you moved to Genk. We've already said that you've had a great stint there. There's not too many Aussies. There's a few that go overseas and win championships in major European leagues. You've done that. How special was that moment, winning the Belgian title for you? After, you know, those earlier stints in it, being overseas hadn't really worked out.
It was amazing. Amazing moment. Not many people gave us the chance to do it over there. We lost our best player going into the playoffs, as they call it over there, Pozuelo, who's now the best, one of the best players in America. We've just yeah, we've gone on in that playoffs and just kept winning games, playing good football, and we had Club Bruges were breathing down our necks the whole way. So yeah, in the second last game, we were away to Anderlecht. We still thought we have to win the last game of the season to win the title. And we're, over the loudspeaker, we heard that Bruges were losing to Standard Liège. So with 2 minutes to go, if the scores remained the same, we knew we'd won the title. We managed to do that. And yeah, the celebrations after were just amazing. But, you know, grown men crying, you know, thanking me for helping bring a championship to the club. It was just truly an amazing moment.
And I know how special those titles are for clubs like Genk. I've actually been to Genk Stadium, and it's a very small town. I think there's only 40, 50,000 people that live in Genk, isn't it? And yet they average about 25,000 every week. It's amazing. Half the town turns up on a Saturday or Sunday to watch the team.
Yeah, it's amazing. 50,000, I think, is how many people live there. It's a mining town. Yeah, a working class town, and they love their football. That was one of the most pleasing aspects for me, being somewhere where football is everything. And yeah, I couldn't go down the road to get a coffee without being stopped and having a chat with someone. So yeah, to bring a title to those people is something that is really satisfying.
Booker, I speak to Muskie a lot, and with his experience, obviously, in Belgium, he says that he was really, really surprised with the physicality of the league. Mm-hmm. Was there anything that really took you by surprise with the league?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that, the physicality. I think the conditions over there allow you to be at a high intensity for long periods. Having come from Australia, that's just not the case. You just can't do it. So that was a surprise for me. I think every team offers something and offers something different. A lot of teams, the so-called lesser teams, play counter-attack football, but do it very, very well. And then you got your bigger teams that try to play some football and break teams down, play high pressure. So, it was all a learning experience for me. I didn't really know what to expect, but, it's still been an amazing time.
You certainly made a great success of it, Vuku. I can ask you one question on your international career, and then we'll finish off with a couple of Twitter questions. You had to wait a long time for your Socceroos debut, but you finally got there, and you saved a penalty on your debut as well. Nick Rojas asked, where does that rate in your career?
Yeah, it's up there. It's up there. I think you group it in with making your national team debut, it's an amazing moment. So I'm not sure if it's number one, but it would be close. To play my first game against Colombia, a very good footballing team, to come on at halftime, I was a little bit nervous. You don't get the best warm-up coming on at halftime as a goalkeeper. Happy with how I went, apart from giving the penalty away. It was a silly, rash challenge, but at least gave me something to do, and one for the highlight reel to save a penalty in my debut.
And obviously big World Cup qualifiers coming up in June, July as well. You're hoping to be in the mix for that, hoping to be back playing before then, I would imagine.
Hopefully, yeah. I love representing the country and being a part of the national team camps. I'll be fit and ready to go. I'm training in here, but once I get out, I'll be training with John Crawley as well, and potentially an A-League club if I can find one that will allow me to train. So I'll be ready to go. And yeah, it's some important games coming up for us to get into the next group, next phase of qualifying.
I'm sure you won't have a problem finding an A-League club to help you train and keep fit. All right, let's finish off with a couple of questions. Actually, this one is from Facebook, from Dave Matthews, and he's our question of the week. Congratulations, Dave. $100 voucher for Outback Steakhouse is coming your way. And Dave says, does Danny believe junior goalkeepers should have more emphasis on long, accurate kicks these days to capitalise on counters? Which I think is a decent question.
I guess there's some merit to that. I think all aspects need to be looked at, especially at a young age. something that John Crawley used to tell me as a youngster. You know, goalkeeping, it's not all about shot stopping, which I thought it was. You need to be good at every aspect because if you're not, you're going to get found out eventually. So there's no point being a great shot stopper and not being able to pass the ball or take a cross or any other aspect of goalkeeping. But certainly if you can harness the long kick, the side volley, as I like to do, quick transition and catch teams out. I think that's a good thing if you can improve that aspect of your game.
Okay, thanks for your question, Dave. And this final one from Arto Harkonnen. I like this one. How much longer do you see yourself playing professionally? And if a genie granted you the wish that you could be a starter for any team in the world, what would be your top three?
That's not bad. That could have been That's question good. Of the week. That's
yeah,
quality.
It could well have been, yeah.
All right. That's a long question. So how long I can see myself going up? Like, as long as I'm still enjoying it and still feeling like I'm able to contribute to my team, I think I'll continue to play. I'm fit and sharp, as fit and sharp as I've ever been. So that will continue for as long as that remains that way. The three teams, the first one's easy, Barcelona, just so I can play with Messi and always have a chance to win the game just because he's in the team.
Was that your team growing up, Danny?
No, I didn't really have a team. I had a soft spot for Leeds, so that would be my second right. team. They've got a long history of having Australians play there, and that's why I've had a soft spot for them over the years. And it'll be pretty interesting to work under their manager at the moment. I think he's pretty amazing, and yeah, that would be nice. And I might go a bit out there for the third one. Not a huge footballing club, but it's up there in its region. It's Urawa Red Diamonds. Yeah. Not so much for the level that they play at, but just the city, the people, the culture there. I really enjoyed it. So, and their supporters are amazing. So it would be nice to play for them and experience the Japanese culture again.
There you go, Urawa. If you're listening, then Danny's available and willing to go out. Mind you, Barcelona could be listening, or Leeds. Who knows? I might come in for you, Danny.
Let's see how we go.
Spider, you get the final word. Go on, your weekly question.
Mate, Vuka, the weekly question is, mate, the best stadium you've ever played at and the biggest dungeon you've ever played at?
All right, so I've played at some good ones. In recent memory, the Beşiktaş's stadium, I think it's Vodafone Arena in Istanbul.
Yeah.
That was amazing. The atmosphere there was incredible. I don't think I'll ever experience a noise like I did that night that we played there. And the dungeon, there's a lot of dungeons in Belgium. I'll tell you that, mate. There's a lot. You know what? The team that Trent Sainsbury is playing for at the moment, Kortrijk, that's a dungeon. If you don't get to play them in the first two or three games of the season, you know you're playing on a cow paddock, because it's only good for the first two or three games, and then once the rain comes, then it's all over. So that'd be my biggest dungeon to play at.
Absolutely brilliant, Vuka. Listen, we really thank you for spending so much time with us today, and we wish you all the very best for your future career, be it here in Australia, which of course we hope it is, or if not overseas. And go well in quarantine, and I'm sure your family can't wait to see you. It's great to have you back down under. Cheers, Danny.
Cheers, thanks, Vuka.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Vuka. Good luck, mate.
No worries. Thanks, boys. That was fun.
And that is us for another edition of Shim, Spider and so much more. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends about us as we want to continue growing. Until next week, bye for now.
Mom. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.